believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here for you. I got to tell you, this, I think that we're going to leave daylight savings and go back to standard time soon. I kind of hope so, because it's dark when I get up and drive into work now. I got to drive with my headlights on into the studio. And I got to tell you, this time of year, I used to not like it back in the days when I was in the corporate world, because I used to live an hour away from work. I lived about 65 miles or so from work. And it was all pretty much interstate between me and work. But I would get up and leave the house when it was dark. And then when I was leaving work to come home, it would be dark as well. So I felt as though I worked indoors, so I may as well have worked in Alaska for a few months a year. It was not a lot of fun. I enjoyed getting up and seeing the sun. So I am anticipating going back to standard time. I really am not a fan of this ridiculously goofy daylight savings and standard time deal. Just leave it there and stick to it. Now, maybe I should move to Arizona or Hawaii or Alaska where I don't have to deal with it. Just leave the time alone and quit screwing around. But then I would still be befuddled when it came to dealing with the rest of the country. Anyhow, I really think this time change thing is 1 hour. Just, it's dumb. Just leave it alone. Leave it at standard time. Call it good. All right? And another thing about time. Have you ever noticed, does it bother anybody when you hear someone say 3 a.m. in the morning? As opposed to the alternative, 3 a.m. in the afternoon. Anybody ever key in on that? I do. I don't really get it. It's like, I'll see you in 5 minutes, 5 minutes from now, is essentially what they're saying. Why repeat yourself? Right? All it is redundancy. 3 a.m. in the morning. Or 7 a.m. in the morning. Please, drop the a.m. Or, you could always drop the in the morning. Or the p.m. in the afternoon. You never hear p.m. in the evening. You always hear, if it's a.m., added to in the morning. I don't get that. I don't get it. Yesterday I was in the shop. My buddy Scott has been very kind in allowing me to use the shop at his house. He's got a decent sized piece of property. He's got a big steel building in the back, which he's got all this great woodworking and steelworking equipment and a welder and grinders and everything. And my right ear is still a little bit goofy right now because of all the grinding and noise, so I brought ear protection for today. Working on my widget on my target stand, and yesterday I had a couple of issues on some angles. Sat around last night, and I made an executive decision to change a couple things up on the design. So today I am I should be ready to go. I have a couple things to pick up at the hardware store on my way to the shop this morning. And when I'm done working at the shop, I will be back this afternoon to do the Dave Champion Show at 3 o'clock Central Time here on RBN. And then from there, I just may very well go back to the shop again. Usually I'm only there in the morning for a few hours, but I may go this afternoon. I have things to do this weekend, get ready. My mom's coming for a visit for a few days, so you know you got to spruce up the house and alleviate all the sorts of things. Which is not really my mom's style, but still, I want it to be nice for her. Stay tuned, guys. More after the break.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, Don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3. Listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys. Last night, I sat around. I grabbed up all of my AR-15 magazines and made sure they were all up to speed. I unloaded every single one of them and checked the followers. Here's the thing. There are three main types of followers. That's the nifty little plastic piece at the top of the magazine when it's unloaded. And the first bullet sits on top of that. Underneath that follower is a spring. And then you've got the magazine body encapsulating everything. And then at the bottom, you've got the floor plate. So, just for some nomenclature, you've got the floor plate. Above that is the spring. On top of that, you've got the follower, all encapsulated around the magazine. So, I go through all of my magazines, and I have three different types. I've got the aluminum body, I've got the steel body, and then I also have some plastic body, in this case in the form of thermal. I've had a bunch of the Orlites in the past. I don't have any Orlites anymore. I have either sold or traded those off for other things at one time or another. So I have all aluminum, and then I have the steel, and then I have the some of the thermals. And most everything's in 30 rounds. I have a couple of 20-rounders. I even have a 10-round magazine for whatever reason. That must have come in a package with something else. I have no need to. It's the size of a 20-round magazine, but there's a big block in it, and there's nothing you can do about changing that or modifying the magazine the way it's designed. Anyhow, the three different types of followers are the original style, which generally come in either some sort of metal form or in the color of black. And then you have the green follower, which came out, which is more of an anti-tilt. And then you have the magpul followers, which come in a variety of colors. Just so you understand, these follower colors, you can't really just go by the color. You literally have to take the magazine apart and take the follower out and look at it to see what you need. Now, the back of all of the followers fit into a groove. They have a little bit of a tab coming down. It's you've got the horizontal surface, and then you've got a vertical tab. On the original ones, there is no vertical tab on the front half of the follower, which is a bad deal. Those things can tilt and spin and get all out of whack. So they came up with the idea of adding a small tab on the front of the follower. Then they realized under certain conditions, even that can tilt and get out of whack. So then they came up with the long tabs on the front and the back, and that's what you get in the version of the magpul followers. Now, it'll reduce your capacity in your magazines by a round or two, but that's okay, because you'd normally load these things down a couple of rounds anyhow. Now, a magazine that would otherwise hold 30 rounds might hold 28. Well, the reason that you would not load it to 30 is because you would over-compress the magazine. If that's the case with the magazines you've got, load them up. Count how many go in there. If it only holds 28 with a magpul follower, load it all the way up because the spring isn't compressed by those other two rounds. You now can fully load the magazine. Also, I have chrome silicone springs in all of my magazines as well, virtually all of them. As far as I can tell, they have all been converted to chrome silicone. Use the best floor plates I've got everything together. As a matter of fact, I've got a bunch of the kind of a cardboard brown color of the magpul followers, and then the latest ones that come out are kind of a gray color. And just kind of being the retentive type of person I am, I have all of the brown followers are in my aluminum magazines. I'm sorry, all of the gray followers are in my aluminum magazines. All of the brown followers are in my my steel magazines. Of course, the steel ones are a little heavier. Plus, on the bottom of all of my aluminum magazines, I have these little magpul things that sit over the bottom. Or my buddy Scott, the guy that's got the shop I told you about that I'm working on this target stand with, I've actually replaced the floor plate with the new magpul style hook follower thing that goes in there. They have a name for it. I forget what it is offhand. Anyhow, I have all of those put together. Everything's ready. I've got my AR bag in order. I've got, 3, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I think, loaded magazines to go with that. In the long vertical pocket of my, I'm sorry, long horizontal pocket on the front of my AR bag. I have my AR wrench in there. I also have a little vertical foregrip if I want to pop the thing in there, if I would need to go with a monopod or anything, and I have the opportunity to grab that. So anyhow, it's all good to go. Of course, the gun is sighted in. I've got the right ACOG on top of the gun for the barrel length and the weight of ammo that I shoot. It is dialed in. It is sighted in. And I have confirmed it out to 600 yards. I can actually get first round hits on a humanoid-sized target at 600 yards with my combination of gun, sight, and ammo. Now, I have to make sure that I'm using that ammo, because if I use one that's a little lighter or a little heavier, the impact is a little off. Do I know where those impacts are? As a matter of fact, I do. So, I'm good to go. Everything's good. I would like to be running a single point sling on the thing, but single point sling actually comes in two parts. You've got the part that goes around your body, and then you've got the part that attaches to the gun. Well, for the longest time, I had the part that attached to the gun, but I couldn't find the sling that goes around my body. So finally, I take it off and I put it away somewhere. And then, what happens immediately after that? I find the sling part. I find it in an ammo can. Now, that was like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. Now, I cannot find the part that goes on the gun. I put it away. I don't know where the hell away is. So, I exchange one part of the sling for the other part of the sling. I don't remember what brand it is, so I can't just go order another one and then hope to end up with two sets when I'm done. So I'm kind of hosed on that. I need to keep a little bit better tabs on when I put something away, where the away is. And everything has its place. You know, like I was looking for some of my extra Magpul followers. I always keep a few extras. I have, I think, 8 extras. So the next 8 magazines I end up with, I have followers for them. And I have some chrome silicone springs for them as well. However, I also have all of those in exactly the same place, in the right drawer, which is where that part for my single point sling that attaches to the gun belongs. That's where it belongs. And it's not in there. So in my haste to take it off and put it somewhere, there's just so many places I can put it. However, considering the amount of gear that I've got, that's a pretty wide arena of all the different places it could be. If I just kind of stuck it with some handgun stuff, or stuck it with some shotgun stuff, or stuck it with some holster stuff, whatever it may be. I also grabbed out last night all of my AR-15 magazine pouches. They are holders. I use the Kydex style that would clip onto your belt. I have the ones that I've got are the Blade Techs, and they have the Tech Lock system on the back where it actually kind of goes down and snaps into place. It's always funny to me, I've mentioned this before, but Tech Lock sounds to me like the name of a Chinese rap star. Oh, it's a Tech Rock in the house. Yes, we rock you. Anyhow, Tech Lock sounds like a Chinese rapper to me. But I noticed a screw was missing. A tension screw was missing. So I actually brought it in here into the studio. The studio's here at Dave Champion's office. He's got an office with several rooms, and one of the rooms is a radio studio, and it also houses an area so he can do some work on his guns if he wants. He doesn't keep any guns in here, but he can come in here, and you know, instead of making a mess at his house, he can make a mess here in the office, which is kind of funny because sometimes I come in here, and I know if Dave's been in here like doing some gun cleaning or something, because the studio smells like Hoppy's number 9, and it's just a reassuring scent. It's very nice. Anyhow, he complained to TechLock once upon a time about all the different screws that fall out. Now, I talked about how I deal with that. I'll highlight it again. They sent him bags and bags and bags of all the different types and lengths of screws. So I came in here and helped myself to one of the about 300 screws. I needed one of a certain length, and I helped myself to that this morning. So thank you very much, Dave. Okay, so here's the deal. If you happen to have a like an Uncle Mike's or the newer style Phobos or I just named the brand, but whatever it is that I've got that I just talked about, that these different holsters and pouches have two different types of screws in them. They've got the kind that would hold the actual holster or mag pouch or light pouch or whatever it is to the backer, that would go through your belt or tech lock system. Then there's the other screws that actually provide the tension for whenever the gun or magazine is in the holster or pouch. This is what I do whenever I get these things. And I try to. Obviously, I didn't do it with this one. I'm going to have to go home and make sure it's done. All of the screws that hold the backing that would go through your belt system to the actual holster or pouch, I take out, and I will get Loctite, put that on the threads, and screw them back in tightly. The ones that adjust for the tension on the gun or the mag pouch, depending on the temperature and the season, whether it's hot or cold outside, they need to be adjusted. But they will back out and fall on the ground, as will the ones that hold the backer to the actual holster or pouch. So I Loctite those in, but the ones that actually are adjustable, I will put some kind of goop on there, either rubber cement and then put it back in, or a caulking of sorts, a caulking that remains rubbery, or like RTV silicone sealant. You mechanics out there will know what I'm talking about. Something like that on the threads of the screws that adjust the tension of whenever the gun's in the holster or the magazine's in the pouch. And then I put all that back together. Then I can still adjust the tension whenever I put the gear on, but I don't have to worry about the thing completely falling out, because there's still at least a little bit of goop in there somewhere holding the thing together. And again, it's goop. It's something that's going to remain pliable, slightly rubbery feeling. So anyhow, all that got done last night. And if you guys haven't done that, this weekend coming up, there's no time like the present. I'll be right back.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Here's a lovely gem of a story. Ohio joins states declaring gun independence. Ohio has joined several other states, including Montana and Tennessee, in asserting independence from federal gun laws with the introduction of House Bill 315. This bill would make all guns manufactured wholly within the state of Ohio exempt from federal gun regulations, provided sales are within state boundaries. The ATF, of course, has claimed that they have the authority through the right to regulate interstate commerce, because even exclusive intrastate sales of guns have an effect on gun sales nationwide. Now, notice they use the word right. The government doesn't have any rights. Nobody within the government, nobody who works for the government, who is in an official capacity of their duties, has any rights. What they have are powers. What they have is authority. That power and that authority can be altered, changed, removed, completely revoked. A right, on the other hand, is inalienable. With two states already having passed similar bills, and many more are being considered, this will not be an issue that can be ignored much longer, and will likely head for the courts as the issue of states' rights versus federal authority are ironed out. House Bill 315, Ohio Farm, says, to provide that ammunition, firearms, and firearms accessories that are manufactured and remain in Ohio are not subject to federal laws and regulations derived under Congress's authority to regulate interstate commerce, and to require the words "made in Ohio" be stamped on a central metallic part of any firearm manufactured and sold in Ohio. Gotta love it. You gotta love it. All that is the legislators in Ohio raising a unanimous bird in the direction, an eagle, a bald eagle-sized bird, in the direction of the ATF headquarters in Washington, D.C., and collectively saying, chirp, chirp. I love it. You know, it's interesting that with the Muslim religion, the Islam, Muslims, they pray five times daily facing Mecca. So wherever they happen to be on planet Earth, they kind of vector in on the direction of Mecca, and that is the direction they pray. For those of us who are gun owners that don't much care for the ATF, we generally will vector in on the area of the local ATF office or the one in Washington, D.C., and kind of fly our own little bald eagle in their direction on a regular basis, which is kind of funny. I think this whole issue about these states asserting their sovereignty when it comes to guns is because they realize the ATF are a bunch of out-of-control bureaucratic jackasses. They don't hold the nation's interest or the interest of the gun owners or the interest of the Second Amendment at all. Not at all. They are a bunch of thugs that are relatively unregulated, and the states are revolting. So you got to ask, why are the states doing that? It's because the ATF sucks. It's that easy. When the ATF goes up to Ruby Ridge and starts slaughtering unarmed civilians, well, guess what? They're out of control. When the ATF goes down to Waco, Texas, and starts slaughtering the Branch Davidian, guess what? They're out of control. Why Janet Reno? Now, here's the interesting thing I got to tell you, man. You got the Obama regime, and they are looking into stuff that happened during the Bush administration with the CIA and this waterboarding and garbage. They said they're not going to look at it, and then decided to reopen it anyhow. Well, if you're going to reopen that, why don't you reopen the whole thing with Janet Reno being in charge of that whole deal at Waco and calling the shots? Because that violated I don't know how many laws and provisions of the Constitution. I'm sure several dozen. Why don't you hang her lard ass from a yardarm, huh? The Bush administration, W's administration, did nothing about it. Okay, whatever happened in the last administration, happened then. We're not going to bother with it. But no, 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 no. You expect the Republicans to take the high ground. You expect the Democrats to take the low road, which is what's happening. That's what's happening. As a matter of fact, I have something funny about that to read during the Dave Champion show, comparing some of the Obama-related things to what if George W. Bush had done them, what would you think? And I have several of those examples. I'll do that during the Dave Champion show today, which begins at 3 p.m. Central Time. So if the ATF can't seem to regulate themselves and the people in Congress failed to pass proper legislation to reel ATF back in, and or the Justice Department fails to reel the ATF in, then the states are just going to say, we're just not going to deal with the ATF. Not on these issues. I'd like to get Sheriff Mack on the show. I know Quince keeps pushing me to do that, and I've contacted him, but he's not the easiest guy to get schedules worked out. Get Sheriff Mack on the show and see if maybe we can get some of the sheriffs to really help handle some of these issues with the feds. More after the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
So the discussion comes up quite often about if somebody breaks into your house in the middle of the night and you've got a gun and you've got a phone, which one do you pick up? Now, of course, the anti-gunners say, oh, just call the police and be cooperative, right? Be non-combative. Essentially, just give yourself over to the will of the bad guys. Yeah. Yeah. That's a mindset and a personality issue. Some people don't even have the capacity to actually do that. I'm one of those people. I don't have the capacity to be able to give myself over to the will of a bad guy. I can't do it. It's not a mental decision. It is a physiological incapability. I can't do it. So I may grab the gun guy, check it, chamber check it, magazine check it, make sure it's ready to go. Then pick up the phone, dial 911, and tell them the story. And then I'm also the type of guy, give them all the information, that set the phone down. I'm not going to sit there having a conversation. They can listen if they want. So here's the story of a fellow by the name of Jorge Guzman, who had both a gun and a phone. Now, he locked himself in his bedroom, called 911, and then waited for the cops while a home invader prowled around his home. Now, he was armed with his handgun, and the 911 operator told him repeatedly that help was on the way. As the minutes dragged on like hours, this frightened guy, Jorge Guzman, he was told to put down his gun because the next person he saw would be a deputy. He almost complied, which may have had drastically changed the outcome of this particular home invasion. Mr. Guzman, who was quite frightened, was speaking so quietly that the intruder was already inside, that the operator asked him to repeat himself many times because he's speaking very softly. So holding a conversation back and forth with a 911 operator is not a good idea. Say, look, this is my name. This is where I live. This is the situation that's going on. These are the other people in the house. I'm armed. I'm in this room. I'm wearing this. If they start getting into a long, drawn-out dialogue, or just simply, oftentimes, 911 operators just want to hear you speak to know that you're still there and still okay, which is a giveaway. It's a target identifier. You're talking. So that's a bad deal. And, of course, if they're making loud noises in the phone and you can't turn that volume down, well, that's a bad deal, too. So after 90 seconds, she transferred him to a dispatcher who asked him to describe his property and where he was in the house. The dispatcher then asked him the same questions as the 911 operator. Okay. So now we're at 4 minutes and 45 seconds. And the dispatcher finally tells him help is on the way. Now, he got on there at 90 seconds, almost 5 minutes later. Dispatcher tells him help is on the way. In the next minute, she tells him 6 times, that's an average of every 10 seconds, that the deputies are right down the street. At this point, Guzman tells her that the invader is trying to open his bedroom door, which was locked. Nearly 7 minutes into this deal, she tells him that the dispatcher tells him that the deputies are right outside and to put his gun down. 30 seconds after that. Now keep in mind, this is a highly stressful situation. This is all there. These timelines come off of the actual 911 tape. So these are real life times. So 30 seconds after she tells him deputies are right outside, she assures him, quote, if you hear something outside, it's going to be the deputy. At 8 minutes, she tells him, 4 deputies are outside your house and assures him a second time that they're outside. Right? Now we're talking 9 minutes into the tape. Now, this is 2 minutes after she said deputies are outside. Now we're 9 minutes in. And he called 90 seconds into this deal. Right? I mean, he called immediately. He's been on the phone now for 9 minutes. While this prowler is prowling around the house. Keep in mind, about 9 minutes ago, I began the last segment. Right? 9 minutes into the tape, she assures Guzman. She assures him again, deputies are outside and are looking at his house. About 15 to 20 seconds later, you hear the bedroom door being broken down. Not just opened up. That means that this home invader didn't care who was in the house and broke the door down. Guzman shoots the intruder as he enters the bedroom. After that, Guzman's voice gets louder and clearer. Now he sees the wounded intruder running away. Now, that, again, that is, let's see. That is 9 minutes and 20 seconds into this deal. A minute and 40 seconds after that, 11 minutes into the tape, the deputies are still outside the house, and the dispatcher asks Guzman if he's discharged his weapon. Okay? So we're talking a minute and 40 seconds after he shoots the guy, the deputy finally asks if he shot. Now, the deputies are outside. They've been outside for 4 minutes. Doing what? Who knows? Okay. After that, the dispatcher tells him to stay in his room. Deputies apprehend the invader, but had not secured the scene and didn't know if there were additional intruders. So evidently, the guy runs outside because he's been shot. Deputies pick him up. They're waiting outside for the dog to run out and be the fence to capture him. When Guzman asked to check on his uncle, who was also in the house, the dispatcher told him to stay in his room because she didn't want deputies to see him and assume he was another intruder, which is good advice for all of us in a situation like that. Around 15 minutes into the tape, now this is about 6.5 minutes after the bad guy got shot. Okay? And this is also 8 minutes after the deputies evidently arrived. The dispatcher departs from her cool professional demeanor to comment on an apparent entry delay. And she says, they're out there for 4 effing minutes and he had to shoot the dude because he was coming into his room. Deputies out there for 4 minutes and they never got in the house? That's what the deputy says on the tape. I'm sorry, the dispatcher says on the tape. Couldn't agree with the dispatcher more. Now, I want to know if these guys are going to be on donut restriction the next day. After apprehending 2 suspects, evidently there was a second, the dispatcher asks Guzman to put the gun to the side so that deputies don't assume he's a suspect and tells Guzman that they know he is still armed. Finally hear the deputies shout at Guzman and he tells them he is the owner. You hear the deputies take control and walk out with him, which means they probably put him in cuffs and took him out just to ascertain who he was. So, let's talk about lessons learned in this story. This dispatcher is not on scene and doesn't know anybody's location. They don't know the geography of the house. They don't know the layout. They don't have blueprints. This places additional stress on both the homeowners and the deputies because the person who's in between the two of them, there's one person communicating with both. All right? One's a dispatcher, and the dispatcher speaking to the homeowner on one end, the cops on the other end. So you have your intermediary there. The homeowner didn't want to shoot a cop and yet was considered an armed suspect until deputies made a positive ID and secured the scene. As a rightful defender, train smart and pay attention to the situation. What this guy went through for 15 minutes had to have felt like 2 solid hours. Right? And I'll tell you what. You know the whole thing where if you're in an incredibly stressful and immediate or abrupt situation, it seems like time stands still? Yes. Your brain starts working much faster. We've talked this before. As a matter of fact, about the guest hosts from last week talked about this. What happens is your brain goes into overdrive and starts clicking faster. You still interpret it at the same rate that you normally would, which would make everything seem to go slower. Well, that's what happened with this guy for 15 minutes. Now, I remember clearing a methadone clinic just a few hours after they finished issuing methadone to the heroin addicts that came to get it one Friday late afternoon in downtown Las Vegas. We're talking the east side of downtown Las Vegas, not the most hospitable area. A two-story, actually the building was 2 stories, but the first level was a parking lot, and then 2 office stories above that. So a 3-story building, 2 office stories that had to be cleared because an internal alarm went off And we were told that the area of that internal arm was not far from where they actually kept the methadone locked up. So me and another officer had to clear this building. Still today, I swear to God, it felt like it took 30 or 45 minutes to go through there. But in fact, it took nearly 3 hours. So it was kind of an opposite effect. I have to tell you, I was absolutely exhausted. During the clearing process of this whole building, it wasn't really that big of a deal. But as soon as we were done, it was clear, everything was code 4, put the guns away. Just about the time we were finishing up, one of the dogs finally shows up. They were out training. So the dog didn't search the place, we didn't. I was absolutely spent. Energy was gone. Anyhow, that's, I'm sure, the way that Jorge Guzman was at the end of this deal. Now, had this guy Guzman placed all his trust in the dispatcher's words and put his gun down, he may have become a statistic. All right? The only person to blame here is the criminal. And the tape makes it clear that even though Guzman was in fear for his life, he did an excellent job. Also, patrol officers are by and large regular folks like us who just want to survive a dangerous job and go home to their families. All right? So, the cops, their main thing that you'll see here, every law enforcement officer say is, you know, as long as I go home to my family tonight, as long as I go home at night, which is fine. But realize they're under absolutely no obligation, no legal obligation whatsoever to provide you protection. So if you call 911 and say, there's an intruder in my home, they don't have to show up. If they do show up, they certainly don't have to go in. They can do exactly what these cops did. They waited outside, and I gotta tell you, I was a cop. These cops purposely waited outside. They know there's a bad guy in there. They know that there's an armed homeowner in there. And rule one for a cop, go home at the end of your shift, was challenged. So these, what were probably, it sounds like, at least four cops, all made the collective decision, we're not going in there. And why aren't they going in there? They're going to put their butts on the line. Not for this guy. Who is this guy? Who is Jorge Guzman? I'm not going to put my butt on the line for him. He's got a gun. He can handle it. We're going to stay out here where it's nice and safe. And if anybody comes out, we'll hook him up. So that was the attitude of the cops. And here's the dispatcher. They're saying, yeah, we're here. So the dispatcher expects him to go in. Right? Why? Because you would think that would be the prudent thing for the cops to do. But no. No. And they're under no obligation to have to. You can't write a policy that says you have to do it because the Supreme Court has said they don't. They don't have to provide protection. Hell, they don't have to respond to the call. Unless it's in policy. But it's not a law. You have to realize that. All of you out there who are anti-gunners, you got to realize, even if somebody doesn't have a gun, if they're just physically superior, if they have any other object with them that they can beat somebody and leave them dead or suffering from serious bodily injury, you got to realize there is not a single law enforcement officer in all of America that has any legal obligation or responsibility to provide protection to any individual citizen. Protection is entirely up to us. So if you live in a place that keeps you from having guns, like, say, the city of Chicago, or you can't get a CCW in L.A., or it's incredibly expensive and highly restrictive in the city of New York, you just can't have guns, or it costs a lot to exercise that right, realize you are absolutely at the will and behest of bad guys. You don't have to have any protection whatsoever. All right? In a follow-up video report by KHOU, I would imagine this was in Houston, Guzman smiles as he listens to a recording of the 911 operator telling him to put his gun down just before the intruder kicked his bedroom door. KHOU reported that deputies arrested a woman who was apparently driving the getaway car. Finally, KHOU concludes that by stating Guzman is not facing any charges, though he is living elsewhere until his house is refurbished. Right? This story did have a pretty happy ending. The bad guy got his painful lesson before getting arrested, and no good guys got hurt. I think it's kind of interesting that they concluded that Guzman is not facing any charges. Why the hell would he? That would probably hold the same token as saying, you know, Guzman did not eat rattlesnake for breakfast. Okay, that's a pretty reasonable assumption. You know, I prefer rattlesnake for a late afternoon snack myself, not for breakfast. How, you know what, though? I have had it for breakfast. I had it with eggs. Yes, I did. I had rattlesnake for breakfast one time. Maybe that was a poor analogy. Anyhow, here's the point, guys. If they're telling you to put the gun down, the only person in this situation that you should ever listen to when someone tells you to put a gun down is when the bad guys are gone or relatively secured, as far as you can tell. You are safe from the bad guys. And the cops tell you, we're here. You're the only one that we don't have secured. Put your gun down and come out. At that point in time, my personal response is, my gun will be holstered and my hands on top of my head. Or my hands up. Not above my head. But my gun will be holstered, my hands up. Kind of in the position where you would start like an IDPA match or an IPSC match. Because from there, if you know how to present from a holster rapidly and it's somebody goofing on you, you can get your gun out and shoot them. Anyhow, more after the break. Stay tuned. Be right back.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
You may remember a couple months ago, we spoke about the Customs Bureau had proposed revising several of its previous regulations. The effect would have been to bring a very large percentage of folding knives under the Switchblade Act. And knife rights folks, and including kniferights.com, with strong assistance from Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms and the NRA, led a public mobilization which garnered widespread bipartisan congressional support. At first, the citizen activism resulted in Customs halting its proposed regulatory change because the Switchblade Act's original language is pretty broad. And then kniferights.com then worked for a permanent resolution of the problem by clarifying the statute. A citizens group with a shoestring budget, Knife Rights, was founded in 2006, and they just had their very first huge victory because they sent out an email that reports that the Senate has passed the conference report for the fiscal year 2010 Homeland Security Appropriations Bill with our amendment to the Federal Switchblade Act intact. Now, the bill goes to President Obama for his expected signature. The bill makes technical changes to the definition of the Federal Switchblade Act. In particular, under the revised statute of a switchblade is not a knife that contains a spring, detent, or other mechanism designed to create a bias towards closure of the blade, and that requires exertion applied to the blade by hand, wrist, or arm to overcome the bias towards closure to assist in opening the knife. So, that is actually going to go into law. What happened at the Customs Bureau was the people who used to regulate those sorts of things were completely taken out and other people were put in there and they kind of clean slated the deal and they started looking. Oh, hey, look at this. The way this is written broadly, we can write regulation over this broadly written law and enforce it. Of course, they got a huge backlash. They would only take comment in a written and mailed form. No phone calls, no emails. And, of course, the people in the Senate said, well, you know, if you do this, we're just going to take away your annual appropriations. We're just going to reduce the amount of money that we're going to give to you. But KnifeRights.org got together, again, on a shoestring budget, had this provision written for a law, and it looks as though that's going to be the way it is. So it removes the regulatory authority from customs in order to be able to do this. So a very good thing for most everybody that carries a knife. I am certainly happy about it. Finally, we got something done in Washington that, wow, it was actually reasonably right. Every once in a while, they've got to throw us a bone. And they did, because we brought pressure to them. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Have a good weekend, guys. Get your gear together. I'll be back in 5 hours. Bye-bye.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.